Next up on Off Duty, how to eat like a Roman.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about eating and drinking and all things remotely related. Today, we're traveling vicariously to one of the world's great food cities, Rome.
Yes, the internal city, the capital of the world, as they say.
I think we can all agree that Romans just eat and live way better than the rest of us. Our guest today figured that out well over a decade ago and made the very wise decision to move there. Ever since, she's been writing about eating and drinking in the city, and she's just released a really, really gorgeous cookbook called Tasting Rome, Fresh Flavors and Forgotten Recipes from an Ancient City. Welcome to the podcast, Katie Parla.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Rome is by far my favorite Italian city, especially for eating, by a long, long way. And the cooking and the way of eating there and drinking there is really distinct from other cities in Italy. In the book, you use this term, cucina romana. Can you kind of define for us what that term means?
Yeah, so the cucina romana is the style of cooking. It's a set of ingredients, a set of techniques that define the food of Rome. And they've developed over the course of centuries, in some cases millennia. I mean, in Rome, we talk about a very different timeline than we might in sort of New York or San Francisco dining. And so some of the things that you'll encounter in the cucina romana are rich offal dishes derived from a peasant tradition, or even Jewish features from the millennial presence of Jews in Rome. So sort of the set of Roman flavors.
Right, right. And like New York, Rome is really a city of neighborhoods. Can you talk about one or two of your favorite Roman neighborhoods and the recipes that you found there?
Yeah, so I'm really, really into sweets. So the Jewish ghetto, and it's fantastic. Some people aren't. I don't relate to them very well. But
who are those people?
Who are these people? So there's this really wonderful bakery, a kosher bakery in the Jewish ghetto, and several of the recipes in the Cucina Ebraica section are inspired by this place. And rich ricotta cakes and spiced cookies really define the tradition of that bakery, which draw influences not just from local Roman Jewish traditions, but also from Sephardic traditions by way of the diaspora community that arrived from Sicily in 1492.
Yeah.
The other neighborhood that I think for a lot of visitors or even people who imagine Roman food, the one that they think of is Testaccio, which was the site of the slaughterhouse in Rome for about a century until 1975. And so a lot of the dishes that we consider classically Roman, tripe simmered with tomato sauce, for example, come from the rich offal tradition of Testaccio. And many of the restaurants there today still produce these offal rich recipes.
Wow. And again, these are traditions you're talking about that are in many cases thousands, multi-thousands of years old. But a thing that I love about the book is that you don't portray these recipes as sacred or set in stone. You know, they're living, they're evolving as the city evolves and as different people come and go.
I think Rome is one of these places where it feels very comfortable to imagine it as a place that never changes. But the super famous dishes that we associate with Rome, cacio e pepe, carbonara, these are inventions of the 20th century. And in the case of carbonara, it's a super recent invention, late 50s, early 60s. So the cuisine is changing. What we eat in Rome today is the fruit of a natural evolution. And the evolution may be sort of speeding up a bit for a variety of economic and global reasons. But, you know, the city's cuisine is alive.
Right. And I was impressed to see that you stepped right into the infamous carbonara debate. Were you at all afraid of the repercussions that might result from that?
Well, if I can be frank, I'm pretty used to being criticized for having opinions about food as a foreign woman writing in Rome. So I'm accustomed to any controversy that sparks. But what I really want people to do is talk about the myths of Roman food and acknowledge them as part of the city's identity, but also go beyond that. And the carbonara debate is an intense one, and every cook, every carbonara eater has his or her own theory about the genesis of this dish. What we do know is that in the later 50s, early 60s, this very rich, unctuous, creamy egg-based sauce started to emerge alongside some of the existing pasta dishes in Rome. And now it has taken on a life of its own, and it's borderline synonymous with Roman cuisine, even though it's relatively new.
I mean, it sounds like you really could have written an entire book just about carbonara, but
yes.
In the end, you narrowed it down to two different versions. Why those two? What is it? What's different about them from each other, and why are they the ones you decided to include in the book?
Well, while the book was being sort of developed and conceived, there were several techniques that I started to recognize in kitchens. And I wanted the reader to be able to reproduce Flavio's carbonara, which is this really wonderful version from Testaccio, regardless of the sort of equipment or cooking surfaces. And Flavio does this carbonara in these huge aluminum warped pans, and he makes his sauce over high heat, which in sort of average U.S. kitchen would result in scrambled eggs. So I wanted the reader to have a sort of 101 intro to creating a really smooth sauce. So that comes in the double boiler method. And then the other is slightly more advanced. I mean, these aren't really difficult techniques, but it does require familiarity with your cooking equipment and with the ingredients. And so that's what sort of caused me to choose these two different techniques for that single recipe.
Right. Now, I hate to focus so much on pasta because there's so much more to the book than that, but I have to ask about cacio e pepe. Did I say it right?
Cacio e pepe.
There you go. Thank you.
I approve of your focus on pasta.
Okay. Have you noticed that it's on basically every menu in the States right now? What's the deal with that?
Yeah, it is everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a variety of qualities, I would say.
Uh-huh.
I think it's such a popular dish because it's super simple, and it's one that has such strong flavors. Cacio is the sort of Roman dialect word for pecorino romano. Pepe is black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And with just a few ingredients, you can produce something really, really quickly. So I think it sort of has that flavor and convenience appeal. I wish that a lot of cooks would actually go to Rome and try cacio e pepe in its various forms.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you would find the result would be much tighter sauces than what you find on most tables in U.S. restaurants. Sort of less butter, less oil,
right,
which is absent from the traditional Roman version, but which is very, very common in U.S. versions.
I have to say, it's something I make a lot at home. I can't say how authentic it is, but I just always have those things in my cupboard, and it's
right,
always
yeah,
peeling. Okay, I won't ask you to sum up this rich book and incredibly complex city in a single soundbite, but what's one lesson that we can take away from the way Romans eat?
I think that the recipes in the book are things that you can execute even far away from Rome if you cook in the Roman spirit, which is using quality ingredients, seasonal ingredients. For the most part, the ingredients are very affordable. And so I think what you can take away is simple food done in a Roman style can sort of bring Rome to your home table.
Wow. You really can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Listeners, please go out and get your hands on Katie Parla's Tasting Rome, Fresh Flavors and Forgotten Recipes from an Ancient City, out now from Clarkson Potter. Katie, thank you so much for paying us a visit today.
It was my pleasure.
And that wraps up another Off-Duty podcast. For more delicious listening week after week, why not subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and now Spotify. Follow us on Twitter at WSJPodcast. And you can find many more podcasts at WSJ.com/podcasts. And as always, if you like what you hear, tell a friend.